Game on 2FM.
With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
You are listening to Jenny Green this afternoon, and Jenny, I hope you're still listening because Dunners is after breakfast and it's his own show he's going to want next, so you better watch out. But it's the 25th of May and this is Game On.
So true. I never even thought about that.
Oh, I did.
I'm not crossing Jenny
Green. Secret Keno, the silent Keno sitting over there. Watch out, Jenny Green.
Anyone that doesn't have a flake in their 99 like Jenny Green is a little bit odd anyway, so...
Getting personal now, Dunners. I like it. I'd like the takedown has begun. Right, well, coming up today, Gary Murphy on what Mickelson's major win means for golf's elders.
We all dream it can happen, and it keeps me getting up in the morning, keeps me practicing. So this does add a bit of confidence. Yeah, I could be as physically good a player as I ever was, but there's a lot more competition these days.
As the Euros get closer, Spain drops Sergio Ramos while Southgate casts a wide net. Mark Langdon has all the details.
We've now been to two semi-finals and we are as keen as everybody else to go further. So we have to allow everybody to dream. We want to dream ourselves, but we've got to make sure that we won't just win because we're at home. We won't just win because we're an exciting team. We've got to get all the parts right, and that's got to be our aim.
And it's Fergie time on tonight's show. Our BAFTA award-winning film critic Alan Cawley has been watching the new documentary on Sir Alec for us.
That changed my life. Seriously, it was the biggest break in my life. And I say that to people often now. I say, don't miss a big opportunity. You know, you maybe only get one in your life. And that was my one in life. That was the one that mattered to me.
Game on 2FM.
Very profound, Dunnick. You only get one opportunity. Did you hear that?
There he goes. Like, Ferguson's turned into Eminem.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Alan Cawley is in studio with us and we're going to be talking to him very, very shortly. But first, we have to start with Chapter 29 of the Claire Wexford saga that has been ongoing for the
dark arts that we mentioned last night seem to be coming true.
Well, the latest development just now is that the Clare GAA say the HSC have confirmed to hurling manager Brian Lohan that two of his panellists were deemed COVID-19 close contacts after discussions with the two Wexford players who had tested positive. So they have just released a statement just before we come on air, and they have said that Brian Lohan was made aware of this by the HSC, which does make it very interesting because the question had been asked repeatedly, where did and how and why were these two Clare players deemed close contacts? Well, this is what Clare are saying, and we will also wait for Wexford to respond because I'm sure they will.
Well, we know what I said last night. Michael Martin said no Wexford player had anything to do with the listing of Clare players as close contacts, but apparently the HSE said they do. So just goes on, Marie. The GAA, it's all a saga, isn't it?
Ruby, you just love these GAA controversies. Love them.
There's one every day. It's just incredible. It's better than politics.
Do you know why? It's because it means so much to us. That's why.
Community. And it's all community. We look out for each other. The Wexford lads are getting the Clare lads.
Well, do you know what? When Kildare get to an All-Ireland final and you're looking for a ticket, I hope you don't get one. I hope that people are listening to this.
There's two big ifs in there.
Well, you never know.
If Kildare get to an All-Ireland final being the first one.
Well, when the All-Ireland finals come around and you're looking for tickets, I hope nobody gives them to you. I'll be playing
so
this back.
She's just really annoyed now, isn't she?
It's done. I revved her up for the whole show. And he can't get on. What is going to happen when he leaves?
Do you know what, Marie? The sad thing is he'll be in a nice corporate box at that match.
Well, that's true, actually. Yeah,
loving it.
He won't be down with the community. Now, a little bit of other news on that. So the CCCC have confirmed that that game between Kilkenny and Wexford, which was postponed, has been provisionally rescheduled to take place this Sunday, May 30th, in Nolan Park at 3 p.m, subject to the Wexford players currently isolated being deemed safe to play by the HSC later in the week.
Just honestly on it, Marie, what does it all need, this Wexford-Clare saga? Does it honestly need a bit of mediation? And, you know, does it need someone kind of...
Have you met Brian Lohan and Davy Fitzgerald? I don't think that mediation would happen.
There's another job for you.
There you go.
After the breakfast show, around 10:30, you could meet Davy and sort it all out.
Sounds like a great idea. Myself, Brian Lohan and Davy Fitz will meet up for breakfast. Have a right chat.
On a serious note, though,
yes.
Clare do need to put this behind them. They need to start focusing on what's happening on the pitch, because in the run-up to this league campaign, it was all about what was going on in the county board, and now this league campaign has been taken over by this saga, as Ruby said, and it needs to stop now, and they need to start focusing on hurling, because that is the most important thing, that the hurlers are out there being supported, being able to do what they need to do to go out and win matches and to continue to inspire the next generation, because that is what the GAA is about, and this isn't helping at all.
And it's putting your energy into that, isn't it? You know, rather than being blindsided by everything going on off the pitch, and putting
all about the sag and the drama.
You love it.
It's no good otherwise.
Do you know what, Ruby? You're better off watching EastEnders.
See, Ruby's
or Fair
so lucky.
City.
He comes from a real pure sport racing, where there's never any controversy. There's never
it's
any
simple.
Sagas.
You just catch them, you find them, and you move on. There is no saga. Just hit them in the pocket, and on we go.
Alan Cawley is here.
Evening, Marie. Evening, lads. How are we? I'm enjoying this.
Good. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, this is what...
What do you think, Alan? Yeah, would it happen in the League of Ireland?
Oh. I wouldn't even get involved in that one, Ruby. Would it happen in the League of Ireland? Yeah, there's the question. Now, we could be here all night discussing that.
We really could. We're probably
I think
off.
It's all nonsense as well, I have to say, Marie. I'm like you. Draw a line under it and get on with it now.
Yeah, agree. You watched the Fergie documentary for us. We're going to be chatting about it a little bit later on, but I know from the outset, Alan, you were really impressed.
Oh, I was mad about it, Marie. Yeah. Well, look, maybe I'm very biased and I'm not the BAFTA award-winning film critic that you want, as Ruby said, because I love Alex Ferguson. From the day I was growing up, I was a Man United fan, and it was probably more about him than the players, and I loved everything about him, and football just isn't the same without him, I don't think. But the fact that this film was out, I watched it. Yeah, I've actually watched it twice. It's yeah. so good, Marie. It's absolutely amazing. I'd highly recommend it. We'll get into the nitty gritty of it later on, but for anybody listening in, certainly I would advise that they tune into that as soon as it's launched or released next week. It was absolutely brilliant.
I watched it as well, Alan, but I remember so clearly the whole saga around Jim Leighton in the FA Cup. Mm. And like the fallout from it, like too many. That was he'd been in Aberdeen with him, and like never spoke to him again.
No, but and I love the
Alec
fact.
Was right.
Yeah, well, that's why he was the best, Ruby. I love the fact that the big decisions, and that was the quote he used in the film as well. I wasn't afraid to make the big decisions. And what was really interesting about that, I found, Ruby, was Archie Knox, who was obviously his assistant manager, his ally. He would have trusted him, his trusted friend. Archie Knox said, "There's no way that you can do this. There's absolutely no way." And Alex Ferguson said, to this day, if that decision was to be made tomorrow, Archie Knox would still play Jim Leighton. And Ferguson says, no way. He says, I'm my mind made up. Played Les Sealy, and it was brilliant that he said that Les Sealy wasn't as good a goalkeeper as him, but he thought he was.
And I loved that line as well. I thought that was the classic, wasn't it?
And he played him in the game, and obviously the rest is history. And if you go back to Rubio as well, that cup probably saved him. Earlier, obviously, the game against Nottingham Forest, Mark Robin scoring, and then they went on to win it, and as he said himself, once they got the first one, the rest is history.
Alan, Sligo Rovers,
yeah.
Top of the SSE Airtricity League table.
I was in Talla last night, Marie, and I'm going around with a smile on my face all day, because the point you're making there in Ruby about the GAA and the community, well, Sligo Rovers is my community, and I grew up going to the showgrounds, and just to see them play so well last night, to have a team again that we can all be proud of, I was so happy last night. It was just a pity that there wasn't a big obviously no fans at the game, but for Sligo Rovers to go up to Talla, beat the reigning champions, Shamrock Rovers are a brilliant side as we all know, but they were absolutely brilliant, Marie, every one of them, the effort, the work rate, brilliant performances from Gary Buckley, Greg Bulger, they were outstanding, they really were. And as I say, I came out of the place absolutely buzzing. I'm still buzzing today, and they've given themselves a chance. I said a few weeks ago on the show, can they win the league? I didn't think at the start of the season they could. I would have been happy if they got into the top three and finished in Europe, but looking at them last night, they've given themselves a real chance, Marie.
And there's a bit of a way to go yet though, Alan.
It is very early. Yeah it is.
Shamrock Rovers, though, 2 losses in 4 days, not what we were expecting from the defending champions.
No, and they were very poor on the night. That was largely down to the fact that Sligo Rovers played really well, but you would expect a bit more. Obviously, Mandria was called up in the squad yesterday, didn't have his greatest game, but he was playing in a deeper role, which I don't think is his best role. And they have a couple of injuries at the moment, to be fair to them. But as I say, it was probably Sligo Rovers night and all about them. They do have Richie Towell to come in as well, so they'll strengthen, and I think the break might come at a good time for Shamrock Rovers to get some players back. So as you said, I think it sets it up nicely for the second part of the season, that we didn't think we'd have a title race, but looking at it last night, we absolutely have a title race, Marie.
And that is exactly what we want. Well, we'll have the Euros as well, thankfully, over the next few weeks to keep us occupied. And Mark Langdon of the Racing Boats joins us to go through the squads that have been announced and the rest of the European football news. Mark, Gareth Southgate named a 33-man squad today that will be trimmed down to 26 players on the 1st of June. But when he's named such a big squad, it's really hard to kind of pinpoint what the controversies are going to be.
Yeah, I think that's right. He's playing it very safe for now. He'll deal with the flak. So he's put it off for a week, because no matter what he decides to choose, there will be questions over it, you know, whether it is Trent Alexander-Arnold. If he doesn't take Trippier, people will say, you know, he's just won the La Liga with Atletico Madrid. How can you not take him? Or, you know, do you risk Jude Bellingham from Borussia Dortmund? Had a brilliant season. I would expect that he would do that. But there's also the injury doubts over Maguire and Henderson. Also Phillips as well of Leeds United. So I think he's right to leave it until the last moment. You got the Europa League final, you got the Champions League final. There's no need to go early and then have to call somebody up. So I think he's done the right thing. The one player I'm disappointed not to see in is Tomori. I think Tomori has done really well on loan at AC Milan this season. He's a centre-back in a position where I don't think England are blessed, and That's the one. It doesn't appear to be that controversial with sort of most of the English press. But having watched a lot of him in the second half of the season, I think he's unlucky not to be in.
Mark, he has four uncapped players in the squad. Is he really going to bring someone to the Euros who's never played for England? Sam Johnson in goal, Aaron Ramsdale as well, and then you have Ben Godfrey and Ben White. Is he really going to bring four lads that have never played for England?
I'm not sure he'll take four. I think, you know, one of the goalkeepers will have to go because Nick Pope is injured, and you know it would take a remarkable set of circumstances, I think, for the third choice goalkeeper to be selected anyway. I would hope that would be Sam Johnson. I think he's had a better season than Ramsdale. In terms of the two centre backs, I think one of them will go. I just mentioned there that it's a problem position for them, really, the heart of the defence, and none of the options convince me. I mean, I'm not surprised that Dier was left out. I wouldn't be taking Connor Cody either. I know he's seen as a real good guy, but I mean, whenever I've watched him for Wolves, I mean, I think Wolves have been really poor for a lot of this season, and I'm not sure that Cody's done enough to be in. I think that Godfrey and Ben White have both probably performed better than him individually. Godfrey been one of the few successes, I think, at Everton, and he's very versatile, can play across that sort of back four or five. And I think that would be another tick in the box of Ben White. He has and can play in midfield, and if maybe Calvin Phillips isn't 100% fit, then somebody like Ben White could play in a back three, as he does for Brighton. We've seen him play in a back four when he was at Leeds United, and he can also play in central midfield. So it's probably the versatility of those two players that will count for them. It would be a big call, I suppose, to take both, but I wouldn't be surprised if one of them went.
Alan, you have looked at this 33-man squad and whittled it down to 27.
I'm down to 27, Maria, and I would take Sam Johnson. I agree with Mark on that one. The Ben Godfrey, Ben White one is interesting. I don't think he'll take the two. I actually don't think he'll take either, to be honest, Marie. I take Mark's point about both of them being very good players. I really like both of them. I just think he'll go for the experience of Cody, and the fact that what Cody brings apparently around the dressing room and around the squad as well. Apparently he's a great fella in terms of motivation and stuff like that, and he's a captain at Wolves as well, so you need as many leadership figures as you can have, I suppose, going into a tournament. So looking at the midfield area, I think the midfield will stay the same bar James Ward-Prowse. I don't think he'll take him, and it's very, very strong. I think Jesse Lingard, who somebody I would have been very critical of during his time at Man United, but to be fair to him, he's reinvented himself since he's gone to West Ham. I think he's played himself into the squad now and he'll get picked. The fact that Southgate had him obviously in the previous tournament and he's done well for Southgate, I think that'll stand to him also. And you look at the attacking players, like the attacking talent that England have, it's absolutely frightening, Marie. And I know they like to hype themselves up and get all excited at major tournament and the fact that it's in England and all that kind of stuff, and this is a star generation that they have. But it's hard not to be excited about when you look at the players on paper. You look at Grealish and Mount and Foden, Rashford, Kane, Sterling. It's frightening. So I'm down to 27. By the end of the show, I'll have that one gone. Just leave it with me. But yeah, it is an exciting squad.
He has 10 forwards named, Alan, right? Mm. Harry Kane, Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Phil Foden, Jack Grealish, Mason Greenwood, Ollie Watkins, Jadon Sancho, and I can't pronounce the Arsenal players, Saka. Sacco. But who doesn't he bring from that 10?
Ollie Watkins. He won't go. And I think you look at the rest of them as well, Ruby. I think he'll try and take as many as of those attacking players as possible, because it's very hard to leave any of them out. If anyone... I would actually leave Calvert-Lewin out of that, and I know he's done very well for Everton, but because you have Kane playing through the middle, I think you could play Rashford through the middle. You have so much versatility in terms of the options that he has that can play on in the wide areas with Foden, Sterling, Grealish, Greenwood. You can even play Greenwood through the middle as well. So if it came down to it, I would actually leave Calvert-Lewin out of that. The midfield area, I think he'll keep. There might be a question mark whether Jude Bellingham gets in, but he was brilliant in the game he played for England. And if you remember him in the Champions League games for Borussia Dortmund as well, he's been a revelation since he's gone over there. So I think he'll stay in. He'll bring Jordan Henderson as well, because obviously I know he's missed a lot of football, but he's back training now. And I think you need him as well in terms of what he brings to the squad. So looking at it, Ruby, I'm really excited about them. I think the only concern, and I would be with Mark on this, is probably the centre-half position, and especially if Maguire, it looks like he's not going to play tomorrow in the Europa League final, whether he'll be fit for the Euros, there's probably a question mark around him. So I think that's the concern that they have in terms of that central defensive area. You look at Stones, I know he's had a good season, but I think he's been far better because Diaz has been beside him. Mings, I don't rate Mings. I actually wouldn't even have Mings in the squad, but because he's a left-sided centre-half, that's probably the reason he is in, but I don't rate him. But that's why.
Do you think Stephen Kenny would take him?
Stephen Kenny would take you at this stage, Ruby, I'd say. But it's hard not to be excited about that squad, Ruby. It really is. There's so much talent.
Even though you don't rate a heap of them.
Yeah, well, just being honest, Marie.
Mark, okay, so Southgate is putting off the controversy until June 1st. But one person who hasn't put off the controversy is Luis Enrique, with his Spain squad leaving Ramos out and getting a lot of slack for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not least because Alan there can't get the England side down to 26. Luis Enrique has only taken 24. He hasn't even bothered to fill the other two spots.
He's my type of manager, Mark.
his point is that when you do sort of shadow training, really you're going to end up with players that can't even be on the training pitch at any one time, and he doesn't think that that's healthy for a squad to be in that situation, when they're away from home in a tournament bubble, and particularly I suppose in COVID times, making that even more difficult to sort of just get around if you want to go out or whatever. He thinks that could breed unhappiness, and he doesn't want that, so he thinks that 24 is an ideal number. And yeah, Ramos being left out, I think, is hugely controversial for his leadership qualities. He hasn't played much for Real Madrid this season. He hasn't trained much in the last few months either. And when he has played, he's looked a little bit off it. However, Eric Garcia of Manchester City has been selected, and Eric Garcia has barely been seen at Manchester City, and when he has done, I don't think he's looked sort of up to the Spanish national team standards. But it sounds like Garcia on his way to Barcelona in the summer, and there has been a lot of suggestions that Luis Enrique, the former Barcelona and Real Madrid player, but he enjoyed his time at Barcelona much more, is kind of being biased towards Barcelona. Now, I don't think that any national team manager could have that kind of bias when you know that if things go wrong, you're getting the sack. But it is a bit odd that there are no Real Madrid players in this squad. And there are more players from Brighton in it than Real Madrid, which is quite remarkable. Another player that he's left out, Nacho, I think he's unlucky because he's somebody that can play across the back and has played a lot for Real Madrid. You know, he'd probably be, I don't know, first or second choice right back for Spain, but he's not there. He can also play centre back and even left back if you needed him to. So he's made some really big calls, Luis Enrique. There's a freshness to the squad, and I think that maybe that was needed. But if it goes badly, he's going to get a lot of criticism from the Madrid-based newspapers, and they're not shy in dishing it out. Let's put it that way.
No, but it was a Madrid-based team that did win La Liga. Atletico won it on the final day. Their destiny was in their own hands, and a Luis Suarez winner ensured they lifted the trophy.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, another of the players, Hermoso, the Atletico Madrid defender, he's not been picked either, and the Atletico supporters are not happy about that. But yeah, Luis Suarez, what a story this is. Given away by Barcelona in the summer, a sort of two-minute phone call from Ronald Koeman, you know, thanks but no thanks was the kind of message. We don't want you anymore. You're too expensive. You passed your best. He took a pay cut and was desperate to prove Barcelona wrong. Last week, he scored the winning goal that put them on the brink of the title, and then he scored another winning goal, this time at Valladolid, to secure the title. He's not as good as he once was, and I think that's obvious, and we've seen it in the Champions League where he didn't really look up to the standard when he played against Chelsea. But in a lot of the La Liga matches, those kind of mid-table teams where you just need that real killer in the penalty box, he's still capable of doing that. And it says something that Manchester City Sergio Aguero is off to Barcelona in the summer, which suggests maybe that Barcelona realise they've made a mistake, because presumably he'll be on the same kind of money that they've just got rid of Luis Suarez for, you know, in terms of getting him off the wage bill. Missed his goals, and so now they've rectified that by bringing in Aguero. But Suarez, a real big reason why Atletico won La Liga this season.
How big a crossroads are Barcelona at? Like, is Koeman going to stay? Are they just bringing in Aguero to try and keep Messi? What's going on?
Yeah, whether Koeman stays is still open to debate. I think they would probably like to move him on, but it's not a great market out there at the moment in terms of the kind of manager that they want to bring in. There was a suggestion that maybe this was the time for Xavi Hernandez to sort of come back and sort of the Barcelona way, if you like. But there are some people on the Barcelona board that still don't think he's ready. He's been managing out in the Gulf in Qatar. Obviously not the same kind of standard as what it would be at Barcelona. Messi, I think the fact that Aguero is coming along probably does help Messi stay. The two have been friends for years, ever since they roomed together at sort of the under 20 level, I think it was, or the Olympics. So that will definitely help. They haven't got much money to re-energise their team, so they are looking at sort of free transfers, and somebody like Memphis Depay is another one that could be off to Barcelona. I think it's a really difficult summer ahead for them, because if you keep Messi, then you can't put that much money into the rest of the team. If you lose Messi, you're immediately in a crisis, as they found last season when it looked like they were about to lose him. So they're probably just going to have to rely on some clever transfer free signings and stuff like that. And they've not been very good at that in recent years. And a prime example of that, of course, being the fact that they let Luis Suarez go for nothing, and then he comes and denies them the title, winning it for Atletico.
Mark, in the Serie A, Inter Milan were already champions, but Napoli only drew at Verona. That meant Juve snatched fourth place. But could Cristiano Ronaldo be about to walk out the door?
Yeah, I mean, Ronaldo gave quite a cryptic, very long Instagram message where he was telling everybody how great he was in terms of the trophies he'd won all around Europe.
And
that it was it wouldn't be like him, no. And that it was a team effort, but still within that team, you know, there was some individual glory.
ME is in team, you know.
He's obviously quite unique in the way that he sort of goes about publicising himself, I suppose. But when he's won the amount that he's won, maybe he is one of, you know, he can deserve to do that. Again, I think a bit like Messi, Juventus are in a difficult situation, because for all that Ronaldo, and he was dropped actually for the last game of the season, that must-win game at Bologna, for all that they'd love to keep Ronaldo because of the goals that he scores, if you keep Ronaldo, then you have to accept that the rest of the team suffers because you haven't got the money to invest in other areas. And that maybe now would be a clever time to let Ronaldo go. I think if somebody offered, you know, Juventus a fair whack in terms of a transfer fee, or even offered to just take the wages off of them, then maybe they would sort of let Ronaldo go and sort of accept that the rebuilding program needs to happen pretty soon. But I look around Europe and I don't see that many teams capable of signing him or wanting to sign him at the wages that he's on. It's not that they wouldn't want Cristiano Ronaldo. It's just, do you want to completely obliterate your wage bill to do so? I know he's been linked with Manchester United. It would be an emotional and dream return in some ways. But I also look at that United team and feel like they're maybe heading in different direction. They've already got Cavani, that kind of does that role for them. I don't know if you can have two players like that, because for all that he scores goals, Juventus possibly look better as a team when he's not there, because they can work in a pack and hunt the opposition down, and you can't do that. But they are lucky, Juventus, that they're in the Champions League. A remarkable collapse really from Napoli. All they had to do was beat Verona at home and Juventus would have been out the Champions League. They couldn't manage it, and Gattuso was sacked at the weekend after the game, and I'm not surprised really. It was a bitter disappointment to not win that game.
It was a bitter disappointment for PSG not to win the title in France as well. Lille won their game on the final day, meaning that PSG failed to win the title for the first time in 4 years. And with that in mind, and Spurs continuing their talks with Roberto Martinez, but still having no new manager, do you think that Poch could at any stage go back to Spurs?
I think at any stage, I think he could go back one day for sure. It would surprise me if it was now. I was sort of looking at reasons as to why he might leave Paris Saint-Germain, and it's not that Paris want to get rid of him. Even though he didn't win the league, I think that they're more than prepared to give him sort of longer to put his ethos into the team. There's been some suggestions he's not entirely happy in Paris, and it is a difficult dressing room. There's no doubt about that. When you've got Neymar and Mbappe and players like that, it's not an easy one, is it, to manage those egos? He's a farmer's background. He likes hard work. The fact that when he won the Champions, when he won the French Cup with Paris Saint-Germain, there was barely a smile on his face when he lifted the trophy. And yet when he got Tottenham to the Champions League final, he was in tears after winning the semi-final. So, maybe he's not enjoying life in Paris quite how he thought he would. It would surprise me, though, if he went back so soon, because it would almost be an admittance of failure really, that he couldn't manage those superstars, and then you get pigeonholed a little bit as somebody that can't do that job. So it would be a really big call for him. I'd be surprised if he did it. In terms of Lille, their coach, Christophe Gaultier, he's just quit today. So he's leaving on an absolute high. A fantastic achievement for them to beat Paris Saint-Germain's all-stars. But he's decided that, that's as good as you can get at Lille, and he fancies a new task. Probably Lyon calls for him.
Mark, just quickly, sorry, it's interesting you say about Pochettino, because I felt watching the games against Man City, and as you say, he always came across as a very humble man, loads of humility throughout the time that he was at Spurs, but I felt he was actually embarrassed by their behaviour and what went on in that second leg, almost embarrassed to be involved with players like Neymar and Di Maria getting sent off as well. It was, as I say, it wouldn't surprise me if he left at all for those reasons.
I don't think he's enjoying it quite as much as he thought he would. He definitely hasn't sort of brought that Pochettino effect where he galvanised the club and sort of took everybody together with him like he did at Tottenham. And I suppose he did at Espanyol and Southampton. But when he first took that job, I think I said at the time when we were talking about it, he's never managed a team like Paris Saint-Germain and those expectations. So maybe it's not for him. And it's not for everyone, is it, to sort of manage those kind of players. Somebody like Ancelotti, it suits him down to the ground, and he's maybe not as suited to sort of trying to build a club up from the bottom, whereas I think Pochettino sort of enjoys that part of the hard work.
Mark, thanks a million for your contribution this evening. Alan Cawley is staying with us to review the Alec Ferguson movie even, and after the break we'll have golf with Gary Murphy.
With Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Biggest moment of a legendary career. Phil defeats Father Time.
Game on 2FM.
So last weekend saw Phil Mickelson even roll back the clock and win the USPGA. Gary Murphy joins us on the line. Gary, it wasn't a result I think many people saw coming, but it was magnificent to watch.
It was magnificent to watch, Ruby. There's no doubt about that. I did read somewhere that someone had a grand on him at 300 to 1, so fair play to whoever that was. But
I'm telling you, whoever he is has plenty of spare money to say he could have a grand on a 300 to 1 shot.
He does, or else it was the last chance to learn, I think.
Could have been his brother. His brother was pretty confident he was going to do all right. Tim?
Yeah, I think it was more of the history than anything else. Had it been, you know, 10 years ago, everyone would have been uber confident that Mickelson, you know, would just hang in there and do his thing. It was just the fact that he's obviously 51 next month and, you know, would his nerves hold up and was Kepka's going to charge at him and all of that kind of stuff. But he won it in style. And as always with Mickelson, you know, there was drama involved too. It looked like he was losing a little bit in front nine, then hold that bunker shot and just hung in there really well on a very difficult day. The greens were, or the wind was gusting up to about 20, 25 miles an hour, so on a brutal course, and it was one of the most exciting majors possibly since Tiger from an emotional point of view, but golf-wise it was for the purists as well.
It really was. So Gary, you're only a couple of years younger than Mickelson, so just with that in mind, when you are looking at him, how impressive is it for someone who's around the same age as you to be able to go and do what he did?
Well, I couldn't do it at 28, never mind 48, but I think this tournament was won off the golf course. He made a decision a couple of years ago to get in the gym and get a lot stronger and try prolong his career. I think Phil has always, you know, he's always had a long, amazing swing. He's never really suffered any injury, but he made a conscious effort to tone up massively. He's strengthened his core, which I think has undoubtedly helped his swing, because he's always, if anything, been a little overactive with his legs, but with a much stronger core now, he's got a better centre of gravity in his golf swing. And there's a ferocious amount of effort gone into this, because he's always had the skills on the course, and we just saw a little more refined Mickelson. And then, you know, he did what a Hall of Fame golfer would do when he gets in a position to win. He wins, and he won in some style, really, because Brooks Koepka has been the kind of assassin in majors in the last kind of 4 or 5 years, and possibly would have been the last guy that you want beside you, but it was vintage Mickelson.
Gary, what I loved reading about it was that he's also playing 45 holes of golf a day. You mentioned what he's doing physically in the gym and stuff, but I think sometimes, you know, especially athletes can get distracted. He's playing the game. He's honing his skills every time.
Yeah, it's a good point, because, you know, he's that long into his career. You know, does he really need, you know, to be on the range pounding balls? I think out playing golf, he's an artist as a golfer, so I think the fact that he's out, you know, walking that, whatever it is, probably 15, 16 miles a day to play that golf, and he's out playing, hitting different shots, and he's not getting hung up possibly on the dynamics of his swing. And it certainly worked. I would advise any young kids that are taking up the game, get out on the course and play as many holes as you can. I know golf courses are a lot busier nowadays and when I was growing up, but we used to play, you know, 36 holes nearly every day, and it's a great way to learn how to play the game as well as to hone your skills at the top end.
Gary, Phil was magnificent on Sunday afternoon, especially on the way in. Got birdies when he needed them. He had a few bogeys that were always going to be there, but
yeah,
I just got the feeling watching it, Brooks Koepka, the par fives, he left it behind him.
He did. I'd say the burning question with Koepka is how fit was he really? Because he seemed to be a bit impatient, and he was forcing it a bit, which would suggest to me that he was slightly down on confidence. And he was, you know, the double up the second was crucial. Like, it was such an emotional swing on the first green for a two-shot swing with the birdie bogey. And he was just making mistakes that he hasn't done really when he's been in positions to win these. And he hasn't played a huge amount of golf either, because of the knee surgery, and there was no doubt he was feeling the pressure. And when you're not quite 100% on your game, I'm sure it's, you know, it's next to impossible to win some of these majors unless you're Tiger Woods, and there's nobody like him. So And the next bet, like the thing with Mickelson, he's unlucky almost Tiger's been around, because he would have easily been in double figures, I think, for majors had Tiger never decided to pick up a club.
So what now for Mickelson, do you think? What more is he capable of?
He'll just keep going. He's a 5-year exemption now to get into all the majors. He obviously was going to get the PGA as a former champion, but he's a sort of player or a sort of guy that he was never just going to turn up and be ceremonial at these tournaments. I think he would only play if he could compete. Maybe the Masters is a bit different, but now he's back on track. He's in showroom condition. Age is but a number. He's fit as a fiddle, and as long as he can keep his nerve on the greens, there's no reason why there's not at least another, 3 or 4 years competitively on the regular tour, and he'll just mop up on the Champions Tour. But there's no reason why he can't keep going.
Are you feeling inspired watching him, Gary?
No. I know my limitations. I enjoy the odd pro-am and a bit of social golf. To be honest, it's a ferocious amount of effort to get yourself in that condition to play, and then it's time on the road. I couldn't do the travel anymore. I did 37 weeks 1 year on tour, and I'm very happy in the K Club. We've got great members down there, and I get to see my kids every evening, and that's my life, and I'm happy with that.
Sure, Gary, the other guy, I suppose, that rolled back the clock was Páraig Harrington, and you watched him walking off the 18th on Sunday, both himself and Shane Lowry, and how much fun they seemed to have. But they both shot 69 on Sunday afternoon, which was two great rounds of golf for the pair of them.
It was a great draw, but almost sometimes those draws can go against you, because you kind of might miss that little bit of steel on a Sunday because you're playing with your buddy, but they fed off one another. Páraig got off to a great start, and Shane probably thought, I better get going here. He'd been playing fantastically well. I think Larry did really well, because tee to green, he was exceptional all week and didn't hold the putts, but kept going. Some weeks they can be really frustrating, but he kept going, and Larry shot 3 under the last 10 holes, which is sensational golf. But for Páraig, it was just an unbelievable week that would give him so much confidence. And it's great to see. Like, it's the Olympic Club in 2012, the last time he had a top 5 in a major. So it's been a long time coming. He's lost his full status on the PGA Tour, and this really gets him back, believing again, because it doesn't matter how much you've done previously. Golf is all about the here and now, and hopefully they might give him that special exemption for the US Open that Mickelson had, because he doesn't need it now. So, and he's back in the Masters next April, and it's just a great story for Páraig, because he's a wonderful ambassador for the game and for Ireland.
If you're Shane Lowry walking off the 18th now, would you put your arm around Páraig and say, Páraig, little captain's pick there for the Ryder Cup if I really need it? I think Sunday would have been a good time to ask for it.
There was a lot to that, Ruby. That was Páraig would definitely, not during the round, but certainly afterwards, he would have looked back and gone, it's the final day of a major. He's one of the guys, in the running for the team if he doesn't make it automatically. And the first tournament Harrington will look at will be the majors. And Lowry had a top 4, he had a top 8 at Sawgrass, which is almost like a major because of the quality of the field. And Shane would have known going out too in the back of his mind, I need to play well, I need to impress today. And I think it gives him a great chance of being involved in Whistling Straits in September.
Páraig has ruled himself out of being a playing Ryder Cup captain, but Greg Allen had a really interesting tweet about him after the weekend. He said when he came out of 7 months of lockdown, he was ranked 446 in the world, and then he moved up 300 places to 141. What's he been doing for the last few months to make those gains?
Well, he got a massive jump. He hasn't really been doing a huge amount, to be honest. He's been making cuts here and there and been kind of steady, but there were so many. He doesn't play as many tournaments as he used to do, so his divisor is a bit lower. And he's got so many points for finishing fourth in a major, and he had, very little points going in. So that's why it might be a little bit false, that big jump, but he'll certainly take it. And the way Páraig thinks, and Phil is one of his best buddies out there, so he's going to think, going to Royal St George's as a former champion as well, he'll have a chance to maybe add to his 3 majors. You never know in golf; it's all about weeks, and players of that caliber, with so many wins under their belt, if they can get in a position on the Sunday and stay in that zone, and anything is possible.
Gary, Rory McIlroy's tale of woes in majors just seems to keep going on. I mean, he was pretty much gone from Thursday with a 75, 72, made the cut, 74, 72. He never really sparked, did he?
He didn't know. It was a disappointing week for McIlroy. I actually do think he's swinging the club better. Now, at times, that doesn't mean a whole lot unless he actually trusts, you know, and implements the changes. I think maybe Wells Fargo might have been a kind of a false dawn a little early on, but I think the club looked better. It's just, you know, kind of same old thing with Rory. He shoots himself in the foot on the first round, and it's only him that knows the answer to that question. We're just speculating, but he needs to, you know, pretend that Thursday is Sunday and try play the tournament back to front, and obviously not blow up on a Sunday, but, you know, he needs to figure something out, because these guys are too good to give that much of an advantage early doors, and then you're chasing the tournament from there, and it's a totally different dynamic, and you're just going to make mistakes because you're trying to get back into it. And you know, the weekend was a non-event for him. I think he did well to turn up, to be honest, because difficult for these guys who are there to win, and it's over kind of before it started. And I would say over the weekend he was kind of working on things in the swing looking towards Torrey Pines.
We were treated, Gary, to a bit of an insight into how big the rivalry is between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau when that leaked interview of Koepka hit the internet and went viral. So he was being interviewed, and when DeChambeau was walking behind him, for anyone who hasn't seen it, he just stops and rolls his eyes, and you can just see that intense dislike that he has for DeChambeau. And you can't help but think, Gary, that's good for the game as well, because there's two big characters there and they're adding drama.
Yeah, it was hilarious, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Unless you're the guy that leaked it, say he's on a P45 somewhere. But yeah, I think at times, you know, with the PGA Tour, it's vanilla, really, a lot. The only point is, from a player's perspective, that you're doing an interview, and, you know, the lads, well, three of you will know this, but, you know, it's off tape. You know, you have to have that inner belief that you're being protected. You know, I don't think Brooks will care, because he just doesn't like DeChambeau, and he's that kind of character. He'll just run with it, but that point would be very disappointing from a player point of view. Can you trust the people that are, you know, supposed to be that travelling circus week in, week out? But from everyone else, it's just absolute gold dust. You know, Brooks obviously thinks very little of Bryson DeChambeau. You can see he just blatantly irritates him the way he goes about his business and lives his life. And Brooks is completely different. And it's good. It's a bit of spice. You know, everyone is, you know, huggy and kissy too much, I think. There's nothing wrong with a bit of needle. And certainly, you'd love to see them at Torrey Pines coming down the stretch in the same group on Sunday. Because that's what sport's about. It's the same, you're playing a match, you know, you're giving a guy a dig off the ball or whatever the case may be. That's what sport is. And, you know, physically hit them in golf. But you certainly want to get into guys' heads and try have some sort of an edge, because that's what top-level sport's all about. But it was just fascinating to see how much he actually irritates.
Okay, well, lots to look forward to. Gary Murphy, as always, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Game on. Go.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM. Game on, soccer.
What do you remember about Saturday, 5th of May, 2018?
Ambulance service.
My dad is collapsed.
The greatest British manager ever.
What's his name, please?
Alexander Ferguson.
I was crying, you know, because I don't remember a thing.
He just put his head in his hands and went, I hope there's nothing on my memory.
The champions of England.
There better be nothing on my memory. And then he just started telling me these stories.
It's a fact of life, and where we come from is important. I come from Govan, I'm a Govan boy.
My apprenticeship as a toolmaker helped me, I think, in understanding people.
In Glasgow, Rangers and Celtic.
People had the knife and Alec for obvious reasons.
Cathy was Catholic.
I went off the rails a bit. My dad, that's when we fell out. I've always regretted that. But the football was the saviour.
Ferguson!
He was determined that he would go on and prove himself.
Psychology, someone else's work. I call it management.
The impossible dream made possible.
Like you, Alan Colley, I found this compelling viewing because I too am a Sir Alec Ferguson fan, and from start to finish, I can't say I learned too much more that I didn't know, but it was fascinating to watch.
I loved it, Ruby, so much. I was so excited about it beforehand, but it kind of even blew me away. It exceeded my expectations, and so much so that I watched it twice, and I will watch it again when it comes out. I just loved them all along. I loved the drive and determination. It might have helped that I was a Man United fan over the years, but everything that he brought and the demands that he put on that, the players and the squad. But what I loved about this documentary is there was very little Man United in it. It brought us back to Alex Ferguson, the person, where he was from. I love the fact that he spoke about his childhood and what shaped him in life, because that's exactly what shapes us all, is your upbringing and where you're from. And also it was so interesting that as he did progress throughout his managerial career, that he mentioned this so many times in his team talks, that he would speak about obviously the players' parents, grandparents, what they did for a living, and try to connect with them in a way where they should be grateful and appreciate the opportunities that they have that maybe their family members never had. And that was his way of connecting and motivating them. And you look at the success that he had. And I love the fact as well that they focused a lot on Aberdeen. And there was footage there, Ruby. I never saw that stuff after the cup final. That it was just, it was incredible, that interview. I never knew anything about that. And like everybody remembers Sir Alex Ferguson for the success that he had at Man United and 13 Premier League titles, 2 Champions Leagues, 5 FA Cups, 4 League Cups. But if we were just to focus on Alex Ferguson, the Aberdeen manager, I think we'd still be calling him a legend, because he won 3 titles in Scotland, 4 Scottish Cups, a League Cup, a European Cup Winners' Cup, beating Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, a European Super Cup. And the fact that as long as I'm watching football, all I can remember is Celtic and Rangers dominating Scottish football. The fact that he won so much with them, and he was so driven and determined to obviously overtake them and beat them. And he was fueled, I felt as well, Ruby, by what happened at the Rangers story and how it ended for him, and how he felt he was castigated. I felt he was fueled by an anger and a bitterness towards Rangers for that, which obviously you remember the clip with Gordon Strachan where he said that we're just happy to be earning a living, and this mad raving lunatic comes in and he's basically telling them you're going to win the league, and the players were kind of looking at him as much as say, I think this fella's a bit crazy, like, and they had no training ground and were training in a park, and yet
and
he
on
turned the
beach the
whole
in the afternoons
around.
Just it for was, a change of scenery, it was they didn't just, use the car park to head it to the beach. Not about facilities, huh? Centres of excellence.
And people cried about facilities. Now you look what he did, and it was just the whole thing, Ruby, as I say. But I love the fact that the focus so heavily on the Aberdeen stuff as well.
Well, Alan, that post-match interview that you referred to there after the 1983 Cup Final, which they had won, although you wouldn't think so from listening to this.
The rockiest team in the world. They were a disgrace of performance.
Were you surprised by the way that Rangers played?
Noel McLeish won a cup for Aberdeen. Well, Noel McLeish played Rangers themselves. A disgrace of performance. I'm okay in winning cups, doesn't matter. Their standards have been set long ago, and they're not going to accept that from any Aberdeen team.
I mean, that all came off the back. He got transferred to Rangers, £60,000, became the most expensive player in Scottish football. First season he was there, they didn't win the league. In the cup final, they were playing Celtic. He lost his man. He was the striker, the centre defender, scored a header. They got beaten 4-0, but he got the blame and never again played for Rangers. And you talk about fuel and hatred. It was hatred from there on.
And it was interesting hearing his son ask him, why were you so annoyed? Why did you give that interview? Was it because you didn't get their performance? Or was it because you wanted to hammer Rangers? And
the quote he used, Marie, afterwards, that to stick the knife in them, I wanted that. And Ruby, this is why I love him. I absolutely love him, because he's so driven, so determined. Even the quote there at the end, like, we live in a world now where there's, I don't know, performance coaches and life coaches and all sorts of coaches for every little aspect that you want. He spoke about psychology as is someone else's word. To me, it was management. And there's a brilliant part in it as well where he speaks about valuing his staff and the people. And it, when he mentioned himself that he was a toolmaker growing up, and it made him understand people. I love that as well, because if you don't have that and you speak to them all, I think what he used to do when they win a league or win a cup, he'd come back to the training ground and he'd invite all the staff in and everybody would be made feel part of it. He'd never pass anybody in the corridor without saying good morning or hello to him. Everybody was a part of it. It was just some of the, that footage, the cup final. Now, he did say he was sorry he did that through gritted teeth, but I never saw that footage. It was just incredible.
But I mean, we see Sir Alec Ferguson and he's such an iconic figure, but when it brings you back to the very beginning, and he is in Govan, as he said, but he's learning a trade, he's getting to train 3 nights a week to St Johnson to train as a part-time footballer up and down the road. Like, he is just an ordinary Joe.
That's all, Ruby, and I think that's what that. I think
the
that's
beauty
what he brought,
of it, isn't it?
That's what he brought with him through his life, and he would have been dealing with. You look at the standard of player at Man United and the superstars he would have had, and Keane and Beckham and Cantona and Giggs and all these fellas. But he still made them all so humble and made them feel as though never got above their station. They had to appreciate. They had the standards set. Come in, live up to those standards every day of the week. They'd win a league. That'll be forgotten about, to be back next week, focusing on the next one. And to have that over such a period of time and the longevity. And I think, to be fair, we can't, it would be remiss of us not to mention his wife, because, and he said himself, for all the years, he says 53 years of marriage, she'd want to be a saint to be putting up with him for 53 years. Because
and everything that went with it, because it wasn't easy. And we heard her speaking about answering the phone and getting abuse from fans who were disappointed with performances, which is, when you think of us giving out about getting mean tweets, imagine someone ringing your house.
Well, that one as well.
Answering the phone.
Yeah, it's a great point.
When he was in United. Yeah. And he'd been there a couple of years, they'd won nothing and they're ringing the house and Cathy's answering the phone and like what they're not saying about him. And as you say, social media, this was like, wasn't quite face to face, but this was someone telling you what they were thinking, not just writing it and sending it randomly.
Ruby. See, the one, Ruby, where, sorry, Marie, the point there about the son, the oldest son, went into the office or had a chat with him and he just says, look, Dad, please, like,
give it up.
You're not going to turn this around. You're struggling. And I imagine his face, like his facial expression when the son said that to him.
Ruby, you know him, obviously. Like, you have had lunch for him. You've been in his company socially. Like, we did get to see a very intimate personal documentary because his son was doing the interview. But what kind of a person is he to sit across from the table with?
He's an entertainer. I had lunch with him. He came to see... I can't remember why exactly how he ended up in Kill, but he did, with Mike Dillon and Dad, and we had lunch in Salins actually, and he was talking about David Beckham and Roy Keane, Eric Cantona, Ryan Giggs, and he sat and spoke about them all. And we'd lunch for maybe what should have been an hour. I'd say we definitely kept him for 3 hours, but he just continuously told the stories. But even Ryan Giggs tells a great story about going to the Black Tie Do, and he walks in and Alex Ferguson has a go at him because his top button isn't tied up. And then Cantona lays in a white linen suit and a pair of Nike runners, and he puts her hand around him and says, lads, that style. He just knew how to manage everybody. And that's what he was. Like, a psychologist, he was. He was a manager, but he ingrained it into them all. And he built that team in United, but he made them all, he brought them, everyone back to their roots. It is a brilliant watch.
I love that he makes no apologies for being aggressive, for calling people out, because in the current climate, you can't say boo to anyone anymore. And he just didn't care what way he was perceived. See, if he'd go for someone.
That's why I loved him so much, Marie, because of the demands that he put on the players every day of the week. And there was the interview in the film as well with Elton Wellesby, where he speaks about, obviously, Alex, you're bringing through young lads and are you going to go easier on them? He says, no, I'm going to go harder on them. And Elton Wellesby's looking at him so much, really? He says, absolutely, yeah, because they get it too easy and all. And that was 15, 20 years ago, Marie. So I love the fact that as well, he picked out Giggs and the story about Giggs as well. And I know Giggs has had a rough time of it or whatever, but in terms of him as a player, and he was almost like a father figure to Giggs, and the story he told where...
Alan, you're going to have to leave it, so I'm afraid.
Never give in, Alan. You're never giving up. Never give in, it's called.
And it is in UK cinemas from the 27th of May and is available on Amazon Prime Video in Ireland from the 29th of May. We have to go.
Sorry. FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.